Syrian refugee Nazreen was hoping her journey fleeing her country would be over soon. She was taking her family toward Germany to be reunited with her husband. In part four of our series, 6 Degrees of Separation, WAER's Anjali Alvis reports that journey was cut short. Instead, life in a refugee camp included lines, uncertainty, and sometimes sleeping out in the rain.
No one chooses refugee camps or strip searches where your body is left aching, or prison, because prison is safer than a city of fire, and one prison guard in the night is better than 14 men who look like your father. No one could take it, no one could stomach it, no one's skin would be tough enough. After finally reaching Greece, Nazreen was so excited that her journey was over.
Finally, we thought it was the end of our troubles. We were going to head to Germany, and I was so excited to see my husband again. We rented a hotel room for the night. We showered and washed our clothes and boarded a train to Thessaloniki. From there, we hailed a taxi, and with our money running low, we spent 100 euros on our cab ride. It was a long ride, and we were weary. But halfway through our journey, the police pulled us over and said that refugees cannot take a cab to the camp. They must walk. So we walked 2 hours in the rain. We finally reached camp, cold and tired and wet. There were tents being handed out, but we were not one of the lucky ones. We were told the NGOs would be coming the next day to hand out tents, but we could not wait. We brought a small camping tent for 50 euros, and we all slept, one on top of the other, cuddled tight for warmth. The next morning, we woke up covered in dew. The NGOs had arrived and gave us a big tent with blankets, and every couple of days they brought food. We were so humiliated. Every day, we would tell ourselves the border will open tomorrow. We spent 5 months worth of tomorrows. We are still waiting.
When people first reach Greece, they're taken to informal camps like Echo and Idomeni, where they are registered and wait for the next step. Many volunteers flocked to Greece when they learned that the camps were being set up for refugees. Maddie Williamson, who spent 11 weeks in Greece, describes her first encounter with Idomeni.
I think the highest it reached, they estimated, was like 25,000 people stuck there in these fields, like pitching small camping tents in the mud. The rain and wind conditions in early spring were horrible. The sanitation was awful because they had not anticipated this massive number of people actually setting up a permanent spot there. And the clinics, most of the healthcare providers there, except Doctors Without Borders, early on were providing care out of the back of mobile clinics or out of a small tent setup. We would have people with fungal infections in their feet because you could never get anything to dry. There were really bad upper respiratory infections because everything was just soggy and cold and wet all the time. And the kids had constant colds, and people were kind of burning whatever they could find. So it was incredibly grim. That was one of the most shocking, earth-shattering moments of my entire life, was walking through Idomeni for the first time and seeing not just the conditions, but the scale of it was unbelievable.
Like many others who landed on the shores of Greece, Abdulaziz had a hard couple of weeks moving into the informal camps.
In all my staying here, I was in the line for food and for that stuff maybe 5 times or something. We are not used to do that. We are getting our food, yeah, but we can work and we can get our food by our hand. We are not used to get our food from another people. We're making us wait in a line or something to get our food. For one time, it was raining for 2 days. We just drowned in the water. All of the tent, it was like all of it water, the stuff, the things. And they have a lot of precious things, like my hard disk, I got it from Turkey, all of my stuff in it. I have one blanket under me. I have to sleep in it. And then I was the first time going to the blanket disputing, waiting with more than 200 people to get one blanket. A lot of fighting, like, oh, my blanket. Then I was there for maybe like more than 1 hour or something getting blanket. Then I just came back from there, and they have gone to another line for soup because I was hungry after so long day. I got like a soup, and I was walking under the raining, and it was really like, we have nothing.
As more and more refugees moved in, the government began moving people from these large informal camps to a more settled, formal camp. Dr. Afsana Safa, or Afi for short, witnessed this transition firsthand during her work as medical coordinator for SAMS in early May.
They weren't allowed to cook. They were given food, which, you know, didn't look particularly palatable and wasn't the kind of food that they wanted to eat. Although, potentially, I think the ratio of toilets to people might have been a bit higher, the quality still was just as poor. In many of the camps, they didn't have beds. The mosquitoes, where these formal camps were situated, were kind of, you know, in the middle of nowhere. I mean, even our sat-nav struggled to find them. Some of them were situated near sewage plants, and you could smell them, you know. And one of them didn't have any running water. They had a big tanker, and when the water ran out, it ran out.
Afi said that when people moved into the formal camps, it was like hope was knocked out of them. Because the camps were more rigid and fixed, people knew that they were going to be there for much longer.
And often, you know, refugees were saying things like they wanted to go back to Syria even. They'd rather be killed in a bomb blast than, and this is the word they used, than die slow death in Europe, which was really powerful words and true and very, very difficult to witness, knowing that they had come to Europe and this is what they were experiencing.
Now, after like 150 days, 150 nights every day, we have nothing. We are the best people of waiting. We are still waiting. 6 months now, and there's nothing happened. Still, in the same game, same players, new players coming and some players leaving, but we are still the goal. 6 months.
Galia is a Kurd from Aleppo and has 9 children. When I met with her, she spent a long time telling me about each of her children. One son is in Germany. Another was murdered 15 years ago at a wedding. Another was in the military and was taken to prison, but when they cleared out the prison, he was not found. The rest of their children are with her. Her husband was diagnosed with cancer 2 years ago and is also with her in the camp. She prays for his recovery every day, and she hopes that her son in the prison is missing and not dead. She agreed to do this piece because her hope is that if he hears her voice on the radio, he'll get in contact with her. Dr. Noor Akras translated for Galia.
After all these problems started, we all became refugees, and everybody's in a different area. We were humiliated, and this is how it is now.
What's the biggest thing that she needs right now in the camps?
Yeah. The thing that she needs the most is that this situation ends and that God ends the situation for them, because really it's made them all ill.
She said,
look outside, we cook on the fire out there, it's dirty, we're all sick, the kids are sick, our nerves can't handle it anymore.
Her son in Germany sends half his salary every month or two, about 150 to 200 euros, and they use it to try and get along.
She said that the Greek were very hospitable, they were so nice to them, and they welcomed them, and then they got to Edenini, and then they kept thinking, like, okay, today they're going to leave, or tomorrow they're going to leave, and that's how it's been, today, tomorrow, and they haven't been able to leave. We're a big family, there's 8 of them. It's not like one or two people. I don't know when God will make this situation easier or better. I just don't know.
Galia describes her day-to-day life in the camp.
So they wake up around 8:30 once the sun's like hitting down on them. It beats down on them, so it kind of wakes them up. Then her husband rings the breakfast. She sits out here for a little bit, has a cup of coffee. And then they like clean up the tent. They get some water. And, you know, the kids wake up and stuff. We do our laundry. So we have to soak, because the laundry's all on our hand, like we have to soak the laundry first and then we wash it. Then the sun will have moved out of the way a little bit, so then we bathe the kids. We cook, but around the sunset time, whenever that is, all the mosquitoes come out, so right away we come back into the tents, so otherwise we will get bit by the mosquitoes. And the next day is the same thing, every day is the same. There's no place to go, so it's all the same, every day is the same.
I asked what the food was like.
So for breakfast they get a croissant and a box of juice. And a peach. For lunch they had, today they had like lentils with rice. It's like a Syrian dish, or maybe a Greek dish too. She said they didn't like it, so they didn't take it. So for dinner they haven't brought anything yet. She thinks for dinner it might be boiled potatoes. Tomorrow will be macaroni. Sometimes they give them green beans, sometimes green peas, and then they start all over again. She's going to make like a traditional Syrian salad with has little like fried bread on it. That's what they're going to eat today. She said that we don't really depend on the food that they pass out because it's not really, it doesn't taste good. Twice a week they bring them meat. So once it's chicken and once it's beef. But when they bring the meat, they clean it up and they like cook it again just to be sure, and then they eat it to be sure like it doesn't make them sick. And there's an NGO today that passed out bananas just for the kids. So they got four because they have four kids. Oh, every other day it comes. So they used to pass out oranges, but then they found like there was bugs in them. So then they stopped doing the oranges, and now they're passing out peaches.
Over the course of our interview, I asked her multiple times, in various ways, what can be done to improve daily living? And she gave me the same answer every time.
They're not like greedy, like they're wanting things, you know, they just want to eat and drink and not to be dependent on anybody else.
You can hear this segment and others in Anjali's 6 Degrees of Separation on our website at waer.org. The web stories also include pictures of Anjali's experience in the refugee camp and some of the people there. Again, that's at waer.org. Future installments of 6 Degrees of Separation will also appear on NPR One.